வருவான் மழை போல் விழுவான் மறுவான் அறிவான் கல்லாய் உறைவான் உறைவான் காதல் வந்தான்.
There are very few interviews I do wherein I've been asked questions that actually get you to think and not run-of-the-mill generic BS. Yeah. So thank you for asking what you did.
Welcome to the Philosophy of Now podcast from Roots Media. In this podcast, we speak with thought leaders about their philosophy on life that doesn't merely define them in their past or doesn't come for their ambitions in the future, but is their life mantra at every moment, ever present, in their now. So join us on a journey of questions and deep thought that ultimately lead to one question that truly matters. What is their philosophy of now? And in the process of listening, maybe we'll introspect and we will meditate or even stumble upon our own. In today's episode, we learn from Shasha Tirupati. The superstar singer has swept India with her phenomenal voice in such a short span. From singing hits and classics like Barish and Gaana, to Khul Ke Jeene Ka and Vaan, for which she even won a National Film Award, she's sung in multiple languages already. But in this conversation, we go deeper than the success. We talk to the musician about her multicultural background and inspirations, born in Kashmir, raised in Canada, and now singing all over India. She discusses her musical influences, her struggles early on, how she considers herself an old soul, her unending curiosity, her drive to constantly dive deeper into her music, her mental health, and how music is therapeutic, and also the life lessons she's learned from her mentor, the Grammy winner, A.R. Rahman. From her mindset for the future, her upcoming projects, to how she opens herself to learning more. And ultimately, as always, she talks about her life mantra at every moment, her philosophy of now. So let's listen and learn, and hopefully maybe self-reflect together as we go on this journey to understand Shasha Tirupati's philosophy of now. Thanks again for having this conversation.
Thank you.
So if we could start, how did you really grow an interest in the world of music, I guess? Where did that really start for you?
I think in general, when we do have, I think what we grow up with really has and the kind of music that plays in our immediate environment, I think that has a major role to play in the kind of music we end up adapting. Mm-hmm. Or adopting, or the kind of music that we kind of develop an affinity for. So for me, I grew up listening to a lot of old classics from, you know, the 40s, the 50s, a lot of, and my parents have impeccable taste in music. They used to play Lataji, Rafi Saab, and Lata'i songs. That's the kind of music I grew up listening to, and so I think, and I found it to be very wholesome in a lot of ways, also because if you listen to the music from that era, you would realize the significance of the compositions and how much importance was given to a melody and the voice and the orchestration and the way a song would be arranged and recorded, and just and with the given with the equipment that was available at the time. I mean, I recall watching certain documentaries where or listening to certain interviews, mm-hmm. where the composer or the singers would speak of their recording experience of an entire song, and how there would be one microphone, and because of that, every musician and you know, the entire orchestral or the string section or the entire rhythm section, they'd be placed as the sound would finally have to be in the final mix.
Right.
So that is the distance from the microphone they would maintain, and that is how the singer would pop in when he or she would be singing. Then they'd slowly, softly move out of the way for the solo instrumentalist to come and play his part in that same microphone, and then he would move. So, you know, I grew up listening to these stories, listening to that kind of music. And so I think that was my holy grail. And that was the kind of music I wanted to do. And I wanted to sing, and what I ended up performing. So I accredit this to my parents, because I feel so blessed that they actually put that kind of music for me. And so it's strange in a lot of ways also, because we weren't allowed to listen to English music at home. So I had zero, growing up in Canada, I had zero exposure to to Western music.
Were they musicians as well, or was it just the exposure part?
It's funny, they weren't musicians, and there was no background that they would have had musically as well. But having said that, my father does have a beautiful voice, and he does sing really well.
What's interesting about that part of your background and the way you know, you've learned music as well, is that it's very diverse in terms of where you were, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but you come from a Kashmiri background, right? But you were raised more so in Canada, and you're currently doing music more for, I mean, you are doing all over India, but a lot of it is mostly southern India and Bollywood. So it's kind of, you know, a complete package, you know. And do you consider that some benefits to that when it comes to where you are, as well as the type of music that you sing, as well as your ethnicity and background, all being sort of global in a way? Do you see benefits in that? Do you see that as some sort of, you know, superpower in a sense?
Of course it is. I feel like Superwoman. No, I'm kidding. That was terrible. it's amazing. I feel very blessed that I've had a tremendous amount of exposure musically and culturally growing up, because Vancouver itself is a very multicultural city, as you would probably know. I think we've always been taught to celebrate our diversity here, and that was how I was raised. And so having said that, at school, at university, I had friends from every ethnic background except my own, which was very interesting. I had friends from Sri Lanka, I had Pakistani friends, I had Asian friends, I had Italian friends, Croatian friends, and I think that what that would lead to would be many musical exchanges. And I think that was a setting stone, if I may, to the kind of, to my appreciation of music in various languages and from various cultural backgrounds. So when I went on to, and also actually, I think that also facilitated a little bit of my affinity towards grasping languages. There we go. I was for lack of a better term. That really, really helped with that. So when I had to start singing songs in a language that was foreign to me, or in a language that I had, that was not a vernacular that I spoke, I think that really helped, because then I would go into a studio and there'd be a Tabar song that they'd get me to write down, and I'd listen to how they would speak and I would replicate it. And that, the fact that I was exposed to so many different languages growing up, I didn't find it as difficult grasping these languages when I had to sing them as well. So definitely that was definitely a blessing in disguise the exposure.
Do you see yourself having more of one culture than the other? Do you see yourself, you know, having an affinity more towards maybe one type of singing or one language or one culture more than the other?
Quite to the contrary, actually. I think I just became like a sponge after that. I just wanted to listen to anything and everything under the sun. So I don't think I've ever attached myself to one form or one language or one style of music. Mm-hmm. It happened, conversely, what happened is that I started being called for a particular style of songs because I ended up getting a huge hit in that style. So just a mob mentality, you know, everyone kind of just, yeah, typecasts you to be
right.
a particular style of singer or, you know, the singer in, as you mentioned, Tamil as well as Bollywood. So I did, both of my careers kind of took off at the same time. My career in both the industries rather took off at the same time. but yeah, if you're talking about an individual sense of leaning towards a particular language I think I'm very neutral that way.
That's awesome.
Well, I don't know if it is or not. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would be beating me up for saying this. But I would, however, wish to mention that I've gotten a lot of love from the audiences down south. Mm-hmm. Because I do have a massive discography there, not being a native Tamil speaker, as you've already mentioned. So the sense of acceptance that I feel from them and that I've received from them is insane. And I'm very grateful, very grateful.
I guess one of the things that I noticed, I believe it was in one of your conversations or another interview that you had done, where you said that kind of the source of this diversity or this affinity towards it comes from a sense of curiosity, excuse me, and the sense of being constantly curious. Why do you think, where do you think that sense really comes from?
I think it comes from my ADHD. Yeah, I think the fact that I can't really latch onto one thing for too long is, I mean, yeah, I'm a bit of a mess, and I think that mess, being a mess really helps with not latching on, and that's kind of what's happened with me. So my sense of curiosity is a byproduct, if I may, of that.
And what do you think makes you most curious, though? Like, where do you think that curiosity is usually directed in? You say it's, you know, a sort of chaotic sense, and honestly the way I just imagined was like, you know, the typical quintessential artist or scientist in a lab or in a studio, and, you know, just having a brainstorm session, but as a genius inside, you know, that sort of visual that came up in my head. But where does that curiosity really get directed towards?
I would say towards creating. That's not just that, actually. I mean, now that you got me thinking, I think it's to everything. It's when, for example, if I open the fridge, if I see a lot of vegetables and items in the fridge that I feel are just sitting there, I'd think of all the permutations and combinations I could cook with those vegetables and with those items to create something that, you know, would obviously be kind of compatible in terms of flavors, but at the same time be different from what we eat. Similarly, it's about kind of concocting. And even when I'm sitting on my bed or laying in bed and I see a book laying next to my bed, I'd pick it up, and even if it's something, if it's a topic that I'm currently living with my parents, I'm back in Vancouver, and so I have a lot of my brother's books in my bedroom, and a lot of these topics, like I could see Lateral Thinking by Edward de Bono right now, and I think my curiosity will have me pick that up as soon as we're done with this conversation, even though I haven't eaten yet. but it's very fluid. I mean, I guess, and the thing is that, I mean, my curiosity is not something that I have complete control over. Right. I should probably mention that right now. So it's very random. So whatever it kind of like a blanket. It's kind of a blanket curiosity that applies itself to whatever I see in front of me. And as I mentioned, ADHD, I think that's kind of one of the reasons why. And speaking in terms of my art, that is where when I do need to, when it does come into play, it comes to trying new filters when I'm editing a music video that I'm working on, or taking different camera angles when I'm shooting those parts, or when it comes to trying new sounds or experimenting with new sound design or VSTs on Logic when I'm producing a track.
Right.
All of these things. I'll not limit it to just my art. It kind of extends and overflows to a lot of different aspects of my life.
Mm. And do you see that, again, do you see that as like a something that's been helpful to you?
I think it has its pros and cons. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, putting undivided attention to one thing makes people a lot more successful. To me, it's worked quite the contrary. I think the more things I've kind of kept myself involved with, I think that's worked for me. But again, I can only speculate and hypothesize whether me directing all of my creativity or my lack of concentration, if me directing all of my concentration, despite the lack of concentration I have, to one sphere or to one stream or just to my art, I don't know how that would may or may not have helped me. Or ended up making things different for me.
You could see it in your work where it is so diverse, where you are trying to do multiple things and succeeding in it as well. So I guess it is working pretty well.
I hope it is.
You also call yourself an old soul. Why do you say that?
I see that for a lot of reasons. Or I believe that for a lot of reasons. I think I do, and again, I mean, it's not a particular genre of music or a language that I'm speaking of over here. And this is in context to your one of your previous questions about having an affinity towards them. But I do feel very attached, or I feel this inexplicable inclination towards, I don't know, the entire culture and subculture prevalent during the 30s and the 40s and probably even earlier. And it's strange because when I was, I probably know 2,000, 3,000 songs from that era.
Wow.
That
is like Indian film music that you're referring to, or do you mean
jazz standards or Indian film music? It's just and jazz standards, I started listening to them a lot later when I started studying music and when I started kind of digging deeper into the Indian classics. Then I kind of, and of course we listen to a lot of music. I listen to everything except for death metal under the sun. So when I started listening, I chanced upon a lot of old Ray Charles and Ella Fitzgerald and Etta James and music from that time. And I found that similarity in orchestration in a lot of ways to the music that I grew up listening to. So that got me curious, of course. So right. I started listening to a lot of that and I just felt like that was home. And so what would end up happening is that when I'd be sitting at a Starbucks and I'd be And they play a lot of those old classics and jazz standards. I'd end up buying more coffee than I should and more coffee than at that time that I could afford back in school. and I'd stay back, not for the coffee. I mean, as much of a coffeeholic that I am, I'd stay back just to listen to a little bit more of that music. And I feel even, I don't know, it's strange, but you know, when I like doing my hair up like that, and I like doing my makeup like that. And I just, if I had, yeah, I would walk into an old vintage store and I would pick up, and I'm looking at certain vintage pieces in my bedroom as I'm speaking. I'd look at them and I'd feel like I belong there. I don't know how to explain it. It's something you feel more than you can explain or that you can talk about. But yeah, I think that's where my heart is, and that is probably one of the reasons why I would consider myself an old soul. And that is just, I think, the superficiality of it. I think deep, more internally, when it comes to you as a person, I do believe, as much as my heart's been broken and as much as I've been the reason behind my heartbreaks, I do see things from a very old person perspective a lot of times.
What does that mean?
I do believe in love that lasts. I do believe that we have the capacity to be not polyamorous. I feel we do have, and I think I may not forget, but I do forgive. And I think that's something that a lot of people today, a lot of peers don't do. I think it's really, if you think about it, if you start thinking about it, I could talk about this for hours, but yes, I do have an old soul inside me.
Would you say that includes, I guess, the more traditional cultural soul of Indian culture, that the value of that plays a big role in your life? Would you say that's also what is at the core of it internally?
Why not? if I have to, I mean, can, but I mean, at the same time, I think for you to actually appreciate it at a time where you're not aware of what you're listening to, I think that is kind of what pops it open for you and kind of says that, okay, why was I inclined towards that and not the music of the 90s, which is when I grew up? I would never listen to the radio channels playing current music at the time, until of course Rahman Sir happened. When I heard him, I was like, okay, this is you know, something that, right, that I need to give a little bit of attention to. It's commanding my attention. But everything in between, I would switch channels at that point. And the moment I would hear those lush orchestral section, I'd be like, oh, you know, why does this feel so good? Why does it feel like, you know, I could swim in this.
Right.
That's how it would make me feel. And this was when I didn't really... And I mean, a lot of times, I think a lot of parents play music and children would downright shut it off. You know, or it might be the kind of music that they don't connect to. Why did I connect to it? You know, so I think there's... And then they also used to play religious music at home. I did not connect to that. So I think when it came to... I think... These are things that maybe science has the capacity to prove. Maybe it will in the future, but maybe it can't. So, yeah, even like, you know, just in terms of how I walk, talk, act, I am very childish.
Right.
I will not deny that. I've mentioned this in one of my TED Talks, wherein I've mentioned I have the mind of a six-year-old, but I think it's a six-year-old with the heart of a 102-year-old. I would probably listen to 10% of the music that's out there today versus 95% of the music that was prevalent during the 60s and 70s. I think, but having said that, I think there are a lot of, I think suddenly melody has, and melody, by melody I imply compositional value. I think off late, there are a lot of current composers and musicians and songwriters who are coming up with, who are giving importance to that, and the kind of importance that was given to melody back in the day. So I think the scene is not as hopeless as it was, I would say, you know, maybe even a decade ago. So, yeah.
Moving on to just the music itself and your exposure to it. Correct. You know, my, honestly, looking back after I heard, you know, the numbers that became famous and popular, and then I look back, you know, who is this voice and everything behind it, I immediately was able to understand, you know, I was like, wait, I've seen this face before, and I saw it in Zaria. Yeah, I was like, oh my god, I've seen this somewhere. Which I would love to know, how was that basically the first step to you becoming a singer for film music? How did that process really come about for you?
So Zaria was, I think, my Zaria into my Zaria towards a more established career in music, or just towards me gaining a little more recognition than I had prior to Zaria. Before that, I was already singing for the films, and I had already I'd already sung for some 25 flop films and songs, and but you know, when you talk about being a successful commercial singer, you know, it's about that commercial hit, it's about that big break,
right?
Per se. So prior to Zaria, I had sung for quite a few films. I was singing a lot of on a lot of ad films, and I was doing a lot of voiceovers and all of that. And after Zaria, so for Coke Studio, which is where Zaria was played, I had auditioned to be part of Rehmansir's choir for Coke Studio that season, and he was looking for a Hindustani choir, and I auditioned. I made it through by God's grace, and that was about it. After that, during rehearsals, he randomly looked over to us, the bunch of girls, 6 or 7 out of 30, I suppose, who had auditioned, and he randomly asked which one of us was Sasha, and I hesitantly said it was me, and that was it. I think that was the end of that conversation. That was it. And then we shot for Coke Studio, and I think exactly a month after that episode, I was called to Chennai from Sir's studio to come and record a few songs for him that he wanted to try my voice for, in quotation marks. And I flew down, they flew me down. And I think that for me was the beginning of a career that I'm very grateful for. That was the beginning of a journey of songs in various languages, and including Hindi, including Tamil, including Telugu, and I think that gave me a lot of recognition, and it just for me, that was my big break. So the first song that I recorded for him was from, and I mean, it feels surreal today, but just to sing on a track that stars Deepika Padukone and Rajinikanth sir. For me, that I still pinch myself when I think about it, but beyond that, it's divine intervention, maybe. I mean, I am a believer, and in some force out there, and at the same time, the fact that somebody so up there, and I'm speaking of Rehman sir here, who would believe in your abilities more than especially at a time where you've kind of lost faith in your own capacity as a musician, in your own willpower in a lot of ways. I mean, I had stopped singing for the longest time, and the time when I auditioned for Coke Studio was when I had 95% stopped singing, and that's when I had gone into composition and arrangements and all of that, everything but the singing part. So for somebody to have faith in somebody, in an artist or in the art and talent of an artist, when that artist is not an artist, and and also at a time when I see a lot of people running after name. At that time, I was pretty much non-existent, at least in the film music circle.
Right.
And for him to think that, okay, I'm going to nurture her and I'm going to bring her art to the fore, I think that requires a lot of confidence. It requires a lot of belief, a lot of self-belief, as well as belief in the talent that, you know, that you're bringing to the fore. And it has a lot to do with how sure you are of your capacity as a musician. And I really vibe off of that. And I try and apply that when I'm working till date, because I think that self-belief is so important. That self-confidence is so important. I think that's half the battle won.
Speaking of that, like self-confidence and that self-belief, you say that, you know, you kind of felt like you had lost faith in that artist in you. What kept you to still go back and audition? You know, the ability to keep going after something, despite, you know, things happening, but not being fully satisfied with it or fully feeling like, you know, I've made it, right? Like, I think it's common for individuals to be part of something, right? And feel like they're part of their dream or their goal, but they're not, they haven't achieved it yet, right? They haven't gotten that major break, which it kind of sounds like you were, what you're speaking of. What still made you go and give it another shot?
I think being a Capricorn really helps at that. I'm an overtly stubborn Capricorn, so I mean partially that, but besides that, I think it's just the name, the music, the journey, the everything that A.R. Rahman sir has given me. Had it been somebody else, I'm not sure, in all honesty. The fact that I dropped out, despite being on 7 scholarships here in school in Canada, I did that after hearing Guru, which was composed by Rahman sir.
And right.
The reason why I took such a drastic step towards a career wherein I didn't know anybody or I had no contacts, which is crucial. The reason behind that was entirely Rahman sir. So obviously when somebody's like, okay, there's an opportunity to audition for him, I don't see any reason why I would not show up. And even if I were to sing like trash, I would still go there and I would still audition just because sir. When I was called for the audition, my friend asked me. I mean, he didn't say come down, there's an audition. He's like, would you be keen on auditioning for Rahman for A.R. Rahman, or would you be keen on auditioning for Rahman sir for Coke Studio? It's just gonna be the choir. And I was like, I would, if I had an opportunity to stand in one corner of that studio and brush the cobwebs out of that room, I would do that just because his divine presence was in that room. You know, that is where that's the sense of devotion I hold for Rahman sir. So that was a no-brainer. You'll probably get like an iota of his greatness, right? Like 0.1%, something would just brush off and you'd have that to hold on to for the rest of your life and kind of just, you know, work off of that. he's got something. There's something about him.
Speaking of him specifically, even in your experience in working with him multiple times, you spoke about the divine, quote unquote, divine presence. Maybe you were speaking that in a much more, in a bigger sense, but you know, people who know him, people who have heard of him, know him as a spiritual person who's very, you know, not in tune only with his music, but knows, you know, he's constantly a seeker of looking deeper within himself in the process of creation. Do you feel like that has ever rubbed off on you as well in terms of your seeking of making music and understanding the art and just understanding yourself better through the through that process?
You know, so something I always I've mentioned this in most of my interviews, and which is that I think every time you enter the studio, every time you come in contact with him, every phone call, every email, every the slightest fragment of him, it changes you, or it has an impact on you. Like I mentioned, that one wave, for me, that one wave can mean so much. It can lead to so much for me. And this is just, you know, the beginning of it. That one wave can be something that I could take home and I could write a song and be like, would he be smiling and you know, waving at this had I played this melody to him? And that becomes my parameter. So if I mean, when you sit there and he says something very random, and I recall there was this one recording we had, and he wanted me to record a line, which was, it required a lot of breath, and I am asthmatic. So I kept running out of breath when I was singing that. And he was adamant about me singing that entire line in a breath. And I kept pushing, and I just kept losing my voice or losing my breath. And for me to punch that line, and it was a punch as well, but they were both very long lines. So he would keep playing my voice from the previous take, mm-hmm. and as a voice lead into me punching the next line, which was again a very long line. And every time he would replay my voice, I would cringe. So I think that happened some, you know, 6 times, 8 times. And I think the 9th time I was like, "Sir, if you don't mind, could you just mute my voice from the previous take?" He's like, "Why?" So I said, "Because I hate hearing my own voice." Mm. He stopped the recording and he told me, "If you don't like your own voice, how do you expect other people to like you?"
Mm.
So this is from 8 years ago, and till date, for me, how did that influence me? Every time I record, I make it a point that I need to be in love with what I'm singing. If I am not, that song does not leave my laptop. That does not leave my hard disk. I'm going to keep singing until I achieve a lovable version of myself more than anything else. And this is one out of 20,000 figments of gyan that Sir has bestowed upon us. And every statement, every word he says, there's something uncanny, and it's uncanny. It might sound like I'm hyperbolizing right now, but trust me, you'd need to see it to believe it. You need to be there and in his presence to believe what I'm saying right now. And when you do, you would probably come back and you would probably tell me that, "You know what? I don't know why that made so much, didn't make so much sense when you said it, but it does right now." That's one attribute of Sir's that I've seen nowhere else. And to answer your question, every time I go and enter the studio and have, you know, the slightest interaction with him, a part of it comes to you. And when it comes to what you mentioned about the divinity of what you're creating, or of the creation process, and of that sort of influence or intervention, I think you don't even realize when that melody comes to you, and you don't know where it comes from. I think it's very easy to take credit, what, in quotation marks, we create. But I think to detach from what you're creating is when, or to detach from what you know, rather, I think that is the point you actually open yourselves to creating. I think that's something I've learned from Sir. Or I'm trying to learn from Sir.
What is music for you the most? Is it, do you see it more as a passion? Do you see it as career? Do you see it as maybe something deeper or spiritual? Do you see it as therapeutic? If it is all of it, which one of those matters to you the most?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Not that the others weren't, but music for me is, I think it's an outlet for, I'm an introvert. So for me, music is an outlet. And which in turn becomes therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And this is not something that I went into music or that I pursued music as a career with the intention of. This kind of, you discover yourself every day, right? Mm-hmm. At least I do. And I think music has been a path of self-discovery for me. What music meant to me 20 years ago is not what it means to me today. It's absolutely not. I think I was very mechanical when it came to music 20 years ago. And today, or even 15 years ago. But I think over the past, in all honesty, I think over the past 8 years is wherein I've started feeling a different bonding with music. I feel a different connect with music. I have a different relationship with music now, and I don't know what it's going to be like in the next decade, but at this point in time, music is something that I express with. It's something that if I'm in a lot of pain and anything I'm in, any state of mind I may be in, I'll sit down and I'll write a song and I'll feel better. And I hope that when I put those things out and every time I release, so all of my independent music is a reflection of me. It is a component or a fragment of my life and mm-hmm. a fragment of my state of mind at the time that song was written. So I think if people can kind of, if it helps them overcome something they may be going through, I think that for me would be the goal of my music or the intent behind my music. That's another response to an entirely different question that you have not asked, but I will just put it there. It just came to me.
No, that gave us more. In terms of your approach to a song though, like whether it be, like you said, your own independent or whether it be another composer song and you have to sing it, what is your preparation for it? And I don't mean it in the sense of the technical aspects of memorizing or, you know, training your voice or getting the right sound for it. I mean it more mentally and emotionally, more in terms of the depth of it, subtly. What is your approach to it? What is your preparation for it?
I think for me, and I think everybody has a different, approach or mindset when it comes to recording other people's songs or a song for playback, which you've not written yourself. But for me, going in unprepared is detached maybe? You're going in unattached. If that's a term, going in detached is very important. And by detachment, I imply detachment to what you know, detachment to how you feel, detachment to any frame of mind you may have been in prior to entering the studio. So just so that I can, it's like entering a clothing store with the bare minimal clothes on. What that helps with is for you to easily slip into whatever is available there to try it on and see if it works or not on you. The more decked up or the more prepared you're going to go in with, I think that's how difficult it becomes to try on new clothes. And that's how I enter the studio and sing a song. It just makes me kind of get into the shoes of the composer a little easier and wear their song the way it's meant to be weared rather than with my own,
That same level of detachment or not wanting to prepare too much, do you think that works the same way in terms of the rest of your life? Or do you think that would be, you don't try to take that approach for other things in life?
I think I'm chronically unprepared. I think that pretty much is what I'm going to name my next album. it's how I'm wired. I don't think I ever, I'm an overthinker. And, I think, which is why I end up coming down to zero deduction at the end of everything. And so, yeah, I think I kind of apply that to everything. I do travel a lot. I backpack a lot. And my method of backpacking is standing at the railway station and thinking, okay, where should I go next? Which city and which country should I go next? That's pretty much how I travel. So that says a lot. But I think the time it, when it's about, I think that's something that as a creator, if that's what we're talking about, as a creator, I think, to me, I think it helps because I think you don't taint somebody else's. It's somebody else's baby when you're singing someone else's song, you know. And you don't want to style it in a way that it doesn't that he's not visualized or that he doesn't perceive the song as eventually. When it comes to other parts of my life, I am very unprepared. I am very impulsive. I am very disorganized. But in a lot of ways, that disorganization kind of works for me. You know, if things are too organized, I find it difficult to kind of figure things out. The more I see things in front of me rather than in the closet, the easier it is for me to say, okay, this is what I need done. This is what needs to be done this way. And I think I find comfort in the clutter. And that, yeah, that reflects in my music as well, I guess.
What do you think are your next moves in, not necessarily in a career sense, not necessarily in a music sense, but maybe more, again, in the mindset sense? Where is your focus next? And if the answer is lack of focus, that's fine too.
Well, you answered it right there. No, I'm kidding. I think when it comes to creating, I am working on two EPs currently. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, one of them is called Sweet Nothing. Not Sweet Nothings, but Sweet Nothing. And the other one speaks, it's called Stitched. And Stitched talks about how we're all broken and shattered and torn at some point or the other in our lives, and we have been, rather. And it's a constant effort to pull yourself together and bring yourself back on track. And that's what Stitched is about, that no matter what you kind of, you know, and the entire EP is about just that. And the other, Sweet Nothing is about an entire relationship lived internally. So basically the person you've had this relationship doesn't know about it. And you've pretty much had butterflies, you've had the relationship, you've had your share of arguments and fights, and you've had your breakup, but they have no clue that you've lived all of this internally. So
right,
it's, yeah, that's what Sweet Nothing is about. And that is a collaboration with Keba Jeremiah, who was on Zaria as well. Stitched is songs that I've produced and composed entirely on my own. So
wow
And lots of collaborations. I do Tuesday videos every Tuesday, which I forget to be prompt with, so it becomes Tuesday. But I think I catch up sometime during the week and be like, yeah, okay, sorry, I forgot to post on Tuesday, but here is a Tuesday video on Thursday. I should probably be working on right after we get off this call. But yeah, I have those, lots of collaborations, lots of singles that I'm working on right now. I'm also here in Canada looking after my dad who's not well. So opportunity in adversity, I get to record a lot from home without having to go to studios at a time where I don't think I'd be entirely comfortable being in a studio and recording from a studio. So that's happening as well. So yeah, I think that's the only bit of focus I'm having in my life currently.
And something I guess we like to ask all our guests, what has been your life mantra?
Yeah, I think to constantly... I kind of answered this earlier, and it's being like a sponge, I think. Forgetting what you know, forgetting that you know anything at all, I think. For me, that's something that I've kind of, for me, it's not difficult to forget, for one. With the attention deficit disorder, but... Even despite that, I think it's really important to not take yourself too seriously. I think that has been my mantra. And it shall continue to be that way, I'm pretty sure. Because I think that's where you kind of open yourself to taking more information and taking more knowledge in. You know, learning new songs, learning new languages, understanding people, that is, it's such a beautiful thing. And I think a lot of us, when we interact with people, we listen to respond and we never listen to listen. So I think the moment you walk into a conversation or you walk into a room or you walk into a studio or anything,
right,
with the assumption that you're at rock bottom and you know nothing, I think that is where you open yourself to so many possibilities, and it's beautiful. So yeah, I think that is my mantra.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I was wondering, to kind of cap it off, if you're okay with it, if you can maybe give us a few, you know, lines of any song, if you don't mind.
Of course, I wouldn't mind. Awesome. So yeah, I'll sing a couple lines of I'll sing a couple lines of one. Let me do that.
Okay, sure.
Fun Varavan, Turavan, Maripovivan, Maruma, Arivan, Yenulivan, Arishin, Mirvan, Tulevi, Panivan. Garvam Kunda Kalayureva Kalayureva Ureva Kade Vanda Kanya Nigirva Yen Kalaka Mohani Avanda. I tried to keep it under 20 seconds, way over a minute.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much for that. Yeah, that is it in terms of our conversation. Again, yeah, thank you so much for having this conversation with us.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I should probably mention, though, your questions were great. There are very few interviews I do wherein I've been asked unconventional. Questions that actually get you to think and not run-of-the-mill generic BS. Yeah. So thank you for asking what you did.
Thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Philosophy of Now podcast. For more content and conversations like this, please visit the Roots Media website and keep listening.